Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind with myself, Owen Harrison, Jeff Neville and Tom Savage. This is a podcast focused on all four Irish provincial sides in both the URC and European competitions. We discussed what happened the previous weekend, what we can expect from each province in their upcoming game, as well as any major off-field news. So Jeff, what's your news this week?
I have no news really, no. I made the drastic mistake of clicking update now instead of don't update now earlier. So we're a little bit late in recording. But that's my own fault. I noticed Tom's not here after all the slagging I got last week, which I didn't listen to. But in the words of someone, in the words of Alex Fulton, he said, Jeff, you got absolutely shat on. So I can only imagine how much abuse I got there last week. And deservedly so. I wasn't there. So listen.
Yeah, you don't show up. You're fair game. That's the rules around here.
That's it. That's it. To be honest with you, Tom's reason for not being on, I think, is genuinely so bad that I'm like, we don't need to make something up. Like texting half an hour before coming on saying, I have visitors coming over, so I can't make it. And they're coming from Cork. You're like, hang on. Like you knew well in advance what was happening here. You just had the blatant disrespect not to tell us or not to let us know, which I think is probably worse than anything we could make up, because he's just...
It's just hurting. It's zebra level respect, really, isn't it?
Well, they've actually gone up in my estimation over the last couple of weeks, to be honest. And I think that they'll have... Maybe I'm not right in saying this, but I think that they might get a couple of scalps this season, which would be big for Zebra. And by a couple of scalps, I mean win any game at all. But I think it's actually worse than Zebra level of disrespect. It's just flat out, listen, I'm not coming. And I could have let you know all day, but I chose not to.
And to be honest, it's not even disrespect to you or me. It's disrespect to the listeners, all seven of them.
Yeah, 100%.
And each of those seven can take that personally.
Well, we're down to six now because I think Tom's mom is just like, oh, Tom's not on? Off. So thanks for that,
that Tom. Could be Tom's mom who's visiting.
Actually, fair point. If you're Tom's mom and you're listening in and you've just visited Tom in Cork, let us know.
Please know you're the reason that he didn't show up.
It's like, do you know when you get to an, do you know when you're young and it's like, oh, I can't go because my mom said I couldn't. And it's like, you get to an age, you're like, I really wish I could still use that excuse. You know, like there's like a party or something on and you're like, I wish I could just say my mom won't let me go.
Do you not choose like your wife for that?
No.
Well, you see, that's what you need to do. What you've got to do is someone gives you an invite for something like that, and you rather than saying, oh, my mom says I can't go, I'll have to check with my wife and see whether we have something on that weekend.
The calendar one. Yeah. Sorry. We use that one. Sorry, I thought you meant like, does
my wife says I can't go?
Yeah, like I was like, no, absolutely, I wouldn't say that. No, the calendar one, yeah, gets busted out. Of course it does, like. But like, do you know what? I'm going to go back to just saying my mom said I can't go and just say it with such a blatant face that you're just like, I don't know what you want me to say here.
Someone questioned you and you just said, she said I can't, sorry.
Why are you giving out about
just,
my mom?
Just blatantly keep going with it. Yeah.
I'm going to use that next week. Record, record, Jeff. Are you good for this week? No, my mom says I can't. But no, quite enough week now. I went over to Treviso for the weekend. Had a great time. I highly recommend it as a destination for a match. I was seated in front of what I can only describe as a human loudspeaker. I've never, ever heard voice projection like it. Like, I'm often told that I talk like I'm telling a secret. And that's fine. I get it. Like, I have a low voice. And even when I go to roar, like, I cannot project. Like, I could roar right now in this room. And I'd say next door wouldn't even hear me, like, right? Or the person in the next room wouldn't even hear me. But this person sitting behind us had a foghorn of a voice, and it was quite high pitched. So it was literally like, even like other Benetton fans were looking at me laughing, and I was just like, I know, like, what the fuck? Like, it was incredible. But like, I mean, fair play to him. He was chanting, and he was chanting for everything, like everything, as they were shaping up for a scrum. He was Leone, everything and anything. So it was a good atmosphere now, all the same. They sell Prosecco there, which is class. So you can get your plastic cup of Prosecco for about €3. You can also get Guinness there, which they poured by leaving the plastic pint glass on the bottom and just filling it to the brim and then handing it to people. So that was a bit heartbreaking to see at the same time. But again, it wasn't me buying it, so I didn't care that much. But highly recommend it as a destination. Met some lovely people. A lot of Tom's Discord fans were there. Their mams obviously let them go for the weekend, as well as my mam. So that was nice. And they were
spot some of them on the television.
Yeah, in fairness,
watched the match.
Yeah, they were all seated together now as well and everything, so that was great. What was another funny moment that had nothing to do with the stadium or anything, but the World Cup final was obviously on. Well done, South Africa. Great game. And there was a lot of Munster fans upstairs in a pub watching it, and I was there as well. And, of course, they're obviously against New Zealand in the final. Every time kind of South Africa scored or do something well, like this big cheer, like this, go on South Africa. So obviously, like, probably Orgy and Klein playing for them, you know, led those alliances, and Razzie and Felix and whatever else, like, you know, and Jack and everything. So that was grand, you know, and I kind of was going for South Africa myself as well. But so that was grand. Everybody kind of cheered when South Africa did it, something well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Malachi Fekitoa is sitting downstairs, like watching New Zealand, like it was literally like, yes, sorry Malachi, like, literally every time. But no, it was good crack, like it was fine, it was a good game. But that, I just thought it was funny, like, I mean, the team you played for the season before, like, everyone's out in red, like, you know, everyone's wearing jerseys and jumpers and whatever and t-shirts. And he was just sitting kind of in the middle of them, watching his team lose and watching everybody cheer for the opposition.
For the opposite.
Yeah. So that was an interesting tidbit. But yeah, I highly recommend going. It was met some lovely people, ate some lovely food. Yeah, can't complain really, you know. How was your weekend?
Very quiet. Had to work bank holiday weekend, so yeah. Fairly boring on that front, but
someone has to make the millions to fund this, you know.
Yeah, to fund this recording in 8K high definition. and build the studio in the background. So I was working for most of the weekend, and then, but I did manage to get trick or treating last night.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So went out, obviously didn't go up to the houses myself, so I let my daughter and her friends go off and collect all the goodies, and then I introduced the dad tax as they came back to my house.
You have to learn at some age, you know.
That's it. We there was an economics lesson as they came back in, so they had to pay USC income tax. Depending then whether they were a high earner on the night or not, they got taxed extra, things like that, you know. We built it all in.
And then you had to test them as well first, which doesn't include the tax, you know, like, is this okay, you know, et cetera.
As I heard from someone else, it was like, you know, you hear all these stories, mainly from America, about, you know, oh no, watch out, you know, there could be drugs or something in the sweets that they hand out. It's like,
I also don't think they realize how expensive drugs are.
What drug users do you know that are giving them out free to children?
Yeah. We shouldn't laugh at that. That's bad. But I also had trick or treating, but on the other hand, completely overestimated how many sweets I would need for the children of our neighborhood. I have a shopping bag downstairs full of stuff, and it's like last night. Now, you know, it's Halloween night. You can let yourself off. That's grand. But it's today, like every time I walk past it, you know, it's all the little miniature bars and all that.
Yeah, you're just like, one. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, that's only small. They add up to a couch size bar. But, you know, you tell yourself they don't count because they're so small. 18 of them might count, but here we are, you know, we have to get rid of them somehow, you know.
I think we're looking, I'm getting my wife maybe to do a nice biscuit cake. With the chocolate melted all down.
Do you want no secret?
What?
Don't like biscuit cake.
Oh.
I find it's too heavy.
Oh no, biscuit cake is the best cake.
No, sorry. I think like one mouthful is lovely, and it's just too heavy after that. I recognize the niceness of it. I totally understand, but it's just not for me, to be honest.
And my opinion of you is slightly changing on this terrible news, Jeff.
I know. This could be the worst thing I've ever said on this podcast. It's just not for me, to be honest.
Not for you.
My neighbors, when they were kids and they got Easter eggs, they wouldn't eat the Easter eggs. They'd melt it down and make Rice Krispie buns. But I was always like, how many Rice Krispie buns do you plan on eating over the next 2 days? Like, it never made sense to me. They only want the bars, but they'd melt the eggs. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're in jail now.
The eggs are the nicest bit of chocolate.
100%. Easter eggs are a different level. Different level. How do you open your Easter eggs? I headbutt mine.
Oh, I give them a little dunt off the ground or off the table.
Oh, you should try your forehead. It's fun. Depending on the egg, obviously. Like, do you know the bigger, more expensive, luxurious eggs? You don't want to go headbutting them. But, like, you're running
a lint solid egg.
Oh, no. You're playing silly buggers there. But a nice run-of-the-mill, you know, simple old Cadbury egg. Just give it a little headbutt. It's fun. It's fun. Makes you feel like you've earned it. Will we jump in?
We may as well. We'll discuss some of the rugby. We'll go through it in chronological order from the weekend. So we'll start off with Connacht, who were first up. And they beat Glasgow 34-26. Same scoreline that they beat the Ospreys by.
It's cool, isn't it?
2 weeks in a row. Yeah. So watch the game. Again, totally impressed with the two JJs.
Yeah.
On the Connacht side, Hanrahan and Joyce. I think Joyce is going to be a superb signing for them. He has that bit of everything.
He's been good so far now. JJ Hanrahan, I think, has been already a brilliant signing. Like, he was very good that first day against the Ospreys. Very good again there against Glasgow. What I've actually done on, and I think you might like this, I've decided to have a little game. I've watched the games, and I've picked out something from every game, and I want you to see, can you pick out what I've picked out? So if we're looking at Connacht so far, what do you think I picked out?
I would say line outs in all four games.
That's fair. Okay, we'll take that out.
For Connacht, the two things I have been impressed by is, number one, their defense, and number two, their attacking structure.
So everything.
Well, set piece. Zen is not included in that.
I'm only joking. Energy.
Mm,
I find their energy is incredible. I didn't get a chance to speak about it last week, but against the Ospreys, like, they were relentless, and they kind of faded away for maybe, you know, 15-ish minutes or so, but their relentlessness was unbelievable. Against Glasgow, same thing, just sheer energy. Like, and I think it's actually that energy. You obviously would have seen it as well. That try they scored off transition from the stolen lineout, and just the energy to get into attack there. I just think it's incredible. And I think if they can maintain that energy now for a season and just add to it, and I suppose polish everything else up around it, etc., I think they're going to be really dangerous. As well as that, like, and that energy, I think everything good in their attack at the moment circles around Caelan Blade and their centres. I think they're just causing havoc. And their back three is good, don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking them either. But, and JJ has been very good at 10, etc. But the way Caelan Blade runs those late lines, or runs kind of, I suppose, as the crow flies, and then he's in a good position to pick up the balls, etc. Like, I mean, what has he, 4 tries already this season? 2 games in? Like, and it's just running those support lines, and running kind of as the crow flies ahead of the line of attack and in behind that defensive line as well. In behind that defensive line without the ball. So that suddenly, as soon as any sort of a line break happens, he's literally in behind that defensive line already, and he's just taking pops, whatever. And just like that, the try at the weekend, was it Kilgallen who scored it? I can't remember who finished it.
In the corner, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Kilgallen it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, even that try, like, I know he didn't score it, like Blade himself, but he's in a position to keep that going. He's just that link player, and then he puts
that's that the one in. That's the one off the line out, is it? It originates line out probably around midfield.
Yeah, Glasgow line out.
Yeah, where they take it, and then Blade runs the
crow.
Forward line ahead of the ball, and I think he puts in the kick towards the corner, then down towards the end, isn't it? And Kilgallen scores it.
That's exactly the one. So even though Blade actually doesn't score it, he's in a position to be that link player in behind the line of defence to take that, and just he puts the kick in as well. Now, again, you could say, oh, well, it was a very lucky bounce, etc. But, like, I mean, like, a bounce to bounce, like, you know. But I think everything good around Connacht's attack centres at the moment around the centres and the nine. Now, obviously, the forwards lay the platform, etc. They're getting to breakdowns quickly, recycling quickly, etc. But I just think what Blade and the centres are doing, it's really, really upsetting teams. Did you see the try that bounced off the boot on kickoff? So Connacht just went 9-0 up.
That was so unlucky, because I can understand. I think it was Kilgallen was under it, wasn't it?
No, it was.
Is this one from the kickoff?
Yeah.
I thought it was a Kilgallen, or was it Tyrone O'Hanlon?
No, it was a forward. It was.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh, one second.
I don't want to disparage anyone's name then if I'm getting that wrong. But yeah, like, I can understand it, because you're almost leaving it, trying to leave it, because you know if that gets the bounce forward, you have a scrum on the halfway line. That's attacking scrum, and it's perfect. But on the artificial pitch, that bounce can go anywhere.
It comes off his boot though, doesn't it?
I don't know whether it came off the boot or whether it just hit the ground and came back.
I thought, looking at it, it comes off the... I'm actually looking at it here. I actually do think it comes off the boot. Or maybe it doesn't. Oh, I don't know.
Because I thought... Because whoever was under it, I didn't think they made a play to catch the ball.
They didn't. They want to leave it, yeah. Like, the initial bounce is happening maybe a meter, if not 1.5 meters, in front of the try line.
Right. Exactly, and I thought that they left it go. Now, I didn't know whether it hit the boot, or I thought it just hit the ground and just came spinning back. It was like a one in a hundred chance.
Oh yeah. I thought it hit the boot, but even if it does, just bounce forward. So unlucky. And I actually posted on Twitter saying so unlucky, and you have these people going, "Oh, well, he can use his hands, and it's he should have caught it, and what's he doing letting the ball bounce?" And you're like, "Hang on a second, like 99 times out of 100." That bounces over the dead ball line, scrum back, and he's a very smart rugby player for letting that happen. And like, when you look at it as well, it's the initial bounce. It's going to be the first bounce off kickoff. Like, that ball on a 4G pitch by right should just go ping right over that dead ball line.
Yeah.
Just so unlucky. Like, and I suppose these are the lines we're talking. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago we were talking about luck? There you are. Like, perfect example. Like, but anyway,
yeah. No, like, I, as I say, I was impressed. I think when I look at Connacht now, I think their scrum. I think the way the scrum is changing, how it's been refed, they potentially have a bit of an issue similar to Ireland. They use Buckley to bore in and sort of come in at an angle. And if refs, he was caught a couple of times on Saturday with this. If the refs continue to do that, I'm not sure that Connacht have the ability to go straight and hold with their pack. I think that's one weakness I think that they potentially have. Their line out is excellent. They're using Niall Murray and Joyce as I think that's a brilliant combination there in the second row. You know, you've got Murray for the line outs. And Joyce is so good in terms of his handling and adding that bit of bulk and oomph into the pack. I like the halfbacks, but I think they need consistency over the season. Blade is a superb try scorer, runs brilliant attacking lines, but sometimes his passing can get a bit iffy. And if he can get the consistency in that, it'll up Connacht's game completely. Hanrahan is the same. Hanrahan, I think, what I've seen from him in the opening two games, he adds so much value to the ball. He has that running threat. He's able to sit behind the pods in the attacking structure and just add value to the ball when he gets it. It's not a simple, oh, I'm taking the ball and I'm going to stand and sling it. He's actually adding a bit of sort of dynamic movement to it. He's picking out the pass. He's varying it in terms of the drawback, in terms of going wide, short pop passes, and it's really bringing it in. And you can see how much it sort of helps Colin Ford, who was outstanding on Saturday at 12. I think he did a bit of everything. He punted it. He played 12 really well. He took kicks at goal, and he did a bit of scrummaging, wasn't it?
Yeah.
During the yellow card. So I mean, like, he's one for the future on that, and as they build it back up now with sort of the internationals coming back, you know, hopefully you'll see the likes of Beelum and Aki and that coming back into the team. It'll give them that real boost. They Connacht themselves now, they've had their first two games at home. They've won with the same scoreline. They face Ulster this Saturday, and then they go away for three games. So they have three home to open and then three away. If they can come out of that with four wins, that's a hell of an open for them, I think.
Yeah, I think so too, yeah. They've Ulster at home, isn't it?
Ulster at home this Saturday.
Followed by who are the
trip
three
to South Africa. They're going to Edinburgh first. They have Edinburgh away, and then they're going to Sharks and Bulls in South Africa.
Well, you know me, I'm Connacht play in South Africa.
You back them all the time.
Every day of the week. but yeah, I think four of the opening six, not too bad. I think it's also worth noting as well that when Connacht won the Pro, was it 14 there, 8 years ago? It will be 8 years ago by the end of the season. That was a World Cup year as well. And they made an awful lot of hay at the start of the season.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I think, worth something just keeping an eye on as well. Now, because Scotland were knocked out so early, Edinburgh will have them back. But, I mean, we look at South Africa, like, those boys definitely haven't stopped drinking yet. So I think it's probably, if you had to go to South Africa, now's the time, maybe. You know, you have to do it anyway, so there's no fucking avoiding it. But if you're going to do it off the back of a World Cup win when hopefully they're still probably missing their big boys, you know. Just a thought. Food for thought.
Yeah.
Food for thought.
Yeah, so Connacht play Ulster on... Well, actually, we'll go with the contract news first. Bundy Aki got a new central contract.
Yeah.
And Beelum has signed a new contract as well.
It's big, isn't it?
So that's big.
Pretty
big good news, because Aki would have obviously certainly been, with what you got at his World Cup performance, would have been
huge
front
demand.
And centre.
Huge demand. Yeah.
For him.
And if memory serves me correctly, didn't they do some business with Hansen after the first year of his contract, didn't they?
Extended it out.
They extended that. And the same with Cian Prendergast, I believe, last year, didn't they? So
they did the two of those together, yeah.
Some quality business there.
I think Beelum's contract will be most important. They need that solid tight head in there to anchor the scrum. And he can play ball as well. Keeping him on, they're two players that would have been in demand quite a bit.
Anywhere. I think so. Yeah. Like a quality tight head, like always sought after. And Aki is just Aki. Like, you don't be a world player nominee without people wanting you to play for them. Like, you know,
the only thing, and this is being hypercritical for Aki, is how much he will actually play for Connacht.
Yeah.
Because he's almost getting into that Sexton type role at provincial level, where it's more important for Ireland to get him game time at certain points to get him up to speed for international games than it is for him to be playing consistently for Connacht.
Would you say, though, that the fact he's on a central contract, like, he's not coming off Connacht books, right? Which means that when he does play with Connacht, it's a bonus. But Connacht are just, like, if I was Connacht now, like, yeah, he doesn't play week in, week out for him, and I get that. you're not paying his wages either. So it's like, okay, you're available for the big games, brilliant. But I mean, you're unavailable for, let's say, your, well, obviously the international win, well, in and around, you know, after the World Cup rest, etc., the last couple of weeks, or you might be unavailable leading up to the Six Nations, whatever it might be. But ultimately, like, you know, Connacht aren't losing massive money by paying his wages there. So no. It's kind of like having, like, if we were to do like for like, would it be like having the sevens players come back into the Ireland fold and the women's team as well?
A little bit like that, I think.
Like, obviously different contractually, etc., but like, it's a bonus, you know, to get them back in, kind of a thing. So
it depends on how that works. Is it, as you say, is it a bonus or is it a disruption trying to fit him into something that you have? Because if you gain the momentum with the players you have now, using the likes of Ford and Farrell
I'm not saying he parachutes straight in.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you look at the way that Farrell and Ford are playing the last 2 weeks. Now, it's early doors, I know, as well. It's only been 2 weeks. Like, but let's say they continue on that form. Just because Aki comes into a conversation doesn't mean, like, I know he's centrally contracted, so technically you're kind of like, okay, well, the pressure's on to put him in. Don't get me wrong. I know that too. Like, but it's not a guaranteed start. It's not just like, oh, he's in.
I think it is, in a way.
Sell it to myself, yeah.
I think it would take... I'll put it to you this way. I'm not sure you'd see that many provincial coaches who would be able to drop.
Honestly, I'd put Aki in straight away. I'm probably only talking rubbish, to be honest.
yeah, on that. So, okay, for Saturday night then, they're playing Connacht. Ulster on Saturday night in the sports ground.
Probably get to that after Connacht, Ulster, will we?
Yeah, we'll get to that after Ulster then. We'll go through it for that. So we'll move on then to the next one is Leinster. Leinster bounced back with a 34-13 win against the Sharks. A good win. I thought this was going to be a lot closer.
Sharks are missing a lot, though, aren't they?
They are. But it was a game. It was a strange game to watch because the Sharks had no cohesion about it. There was so many basic, simple errors: drop balls, forward passes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Have you seen the Sharks play before? there's nothing new there.
I thought it was very different from the game that they played against Munster, in the first round. They seemed a lot more cohesive in that game.
Yeah, fair.
And I think they were still in this up until I think it was this. In the second half, I think they still had a belief that they were there. And then Kerwin Bosch had a kick. They had a penalty to go down the line. And I think there was only maybe 10 points, less than 10 points in it at the time. And he had a kick to go down the line to put them like 5 meters out. And he overcooked it.
Oh, yeah.
And that was
the end.
That was, after that, the heads just dropped and it was good night.
That's so soul-sucking, isn't it? When your team misses the kick to touch, like.
Yeah, and it comes back for the scrum. Yeah.
Well, even like if it's like if it stays in play or anything, like, you're just like, look at all those cheap meters. Just especially if you're a forward,
how hard it is to gain those back with the ball in hand.
Yeah, you're just looking at it and you're like, oh, fuck it, you just have to go do it again. Like, it's so destroying. But what do you think I picked out from that game? I'll give you a clue. It's a player. We're going to need to speed this up.
Dylan, Dylan Donnellan from the hooker.
No, he was good though.
I thought he did well coming up from the AIL, only having less than a week to get himself ready.
Yeah, I felt he did very well. But no, Scott Penny. Thought he was very good. Thought he was very, very good. A lot of energy, very physical. I just thought he was very good. I think this could be the season where he finally kicks on. And by kicks on, I mean gets involved in big teams. And I know Josh Van der Fleer is there. I know Caelan Doris is there. I know Jack Conlon's there. But I think, like, he
Baird
could get
also is now seen as a six.
Yeah, Baird, yeah. Fuck him anyway. I just think this is the season he might push on. I just do. I don't know why. I just do. I have a feeling.
I think he'll get chances because obviously they'll need to rotate those three or four players with Ireland things, with Ireland squads and games and rest
but
periods.
But he's had chances. I think he's had years of chances at this stage. Like
I think so. But I think what he's going to need is actually an injury to someone.
Maybe, yeah, maybe, and that's not done. That's just one door closes, one opens kind of thing. But
yeah, like you're not wishing that on any of the players, but I think for something like that to happen, I think he's played in some of the pool games and he's been rotated in and out, but when it's come to the knockout stages, he hasn't been within the 23.
Yeah.
And I think he needs probably that bit of luck of sort of, as you say, a door opening to allow him that chance and then to prove it from there.
Maybe. I don't know. I just think he was very, very good. He's been very good for a while, to be fair. I'm hoping this is the season now where it all just finally fully clicks and he's not just in an international squad, like that he gets a run somewhere, etc. And you might see that happening. Like, I mean, what, Peter O'Mahony? Do you think he'll be in the Six Nations this year?
I think there's a couple of options, whether they move Baird back to six, whether they move, you know, is Joe McCarthy now going to become a real option, or do you put Henderson and Ryan into the second row and you move Ty Byrne?
I think Joe McCarthy this year will be a starting second row. Like,
really?
I think so, yeah, alongside Ryan.
For Leinster or for Ireland?
For Leinster, sorry, for Leinster.
For Leinster.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not talking about dropping Tyke Byrne there at all. No, yeah. Sorry. For Leinster, I think that him and Ryan will be the rows, I'm starting to think.
I think that if that's to happen, I think Baird has to play six.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see Baird in the row, personally. He doesn't play that often in the row for Leinster at all. Like.
No, I think one of the things, and like you go back and you look at the World Cup videos and go through the entire thing for Joe McCarthy, was how little he was used in the lineout.
Oh, sorry, yeah. And if you've Doris and Van der Fleer there as well,
yeah. Do you need to have another lineout option at six, which brings Baird into the conversation to play him at that point?
Fair conversation. Check out the big brain on Brad.
That's it. And I mean, like, as I say, and I'm only going on something as simple as going back. I haven't watched too much of the, gone back and gone through the Leinster stats for the entire World Cup. I think there was McCarthy was on for something like 27 lineouts.
Yeah,
and he was only lifted in one, and that was a defensive lineout.
I remember you texting me that, yeah, and I was like, oh my days, that's a stat and a half.
So look, I think if he can prove himself to be a line-out option, then maybe you can get away without having Baird there at six as the sort of the safety blanket.
Yeah.
But it does put a sort of a discussion around what you need to build that pack.
I tell you,
I think they need someone though with that sort of level of power.
Yeah, I think so too. That's why I think I see him starting. Like, I think he could have a real good role there for them. Like that, just your big physical enforcing second row. I think he could be that, and especially maybe not right now. I'm not saying he is that guy right now, but I think he could become that guy for, like, he's still very young. Like, he's
quite powerful, but I mean, at the same time, he's not the monster second row. I mean, like, he's about the same size as Henderson.
Yeah. But, like, I think he's more physical. I think give him time to mature and stuff like that, and he could be a real damaging presence. Like, I'm trying to compare him to someone, but I don't want to use a name and have people saying, oh, he's comparing him to this guy. How ridiculous. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying he has the potential to be him. If that, I don't know why. I rose my hands like that.
Type of a player, yeah.
But, I think he could just be a really good player for them, a real enforcing role. But I tell you, if you're Leinster, how excited will you be to have Nina Barr come in for to your team? Like, I mean, my days, how excited would you be? Like,
that's it. I'm more excited to see what his remit fully is.
Yeah.
Is he going to be defence? Is he going to be overseeing, you know, the attack? You know, whether that's implemented by Goodman, but is he going to be overseeing that part of it? Or how will it all work out? Because I think what he can do, you see what Neil Arbour has done for South Africa in both terms of defence and game plan and the whole lot. What can he bring? Because Leinster don't need that much. They only need certain tweaks, I think,
yeah,
to get them back to the trophies.
Oh, well, like when you think about it, they're what, like two semis and two finals? Is it 6 points or something?
Yeah.
So, like, okay, I mean, it's nothing. Like, it's nothing. It's no. A bit of luck. Like, it's, but it's, I'd be so excited. Like, watching that defensive display from South Africa on Saturday, like, incredible, just incredible. And I know obviously you're working with the creme de la creme at international level, but I think there's enough, there's more than enough good players in Leinster for him to have a real impact as well. So I'm very, like, I'd say if I was a player, especially, you know, a defensive player, like someone like Gary Ringrose, etc., like really, really good in the defensive 13. Like 13's so difficult to defend in. And then suddenly you look at what Jesse Creel's done all this World Cup defending at 13. Like, if you're the likes of Gary Ringrose and you're thinking, I'm going to have this guy coming in, like, helping me further my defensive level. And I mean, like, if you're Andy Farrell as well, or Simon Easterby, I should say, like, you're seeing the defensive Nina Barr come in, coaching your 13, coaching, well, an awful lot of your like, the spine your players, of your yeah. team, like, yeah. And suddenly you're thinking, well, if this is the level of, you know, if this is the level of coaching they're getting at provincial level, like when they go up a level again, like, fuck, like, unbelievable when you think about it. Like, I didn't even finish last sentence, but like, I'd be so excited.
Like, the one thing that I've always taken from hearing players talk about working with him is how simple he makes his game plan in terms of defensive strategy.
Oh, it's, yeah. You know, like, and we've said that. We said that, I think, a few weeks ago. We said we'd play with South Africa tomorrow because you'd know exactly what your role is.
Like, yeah. Like,
it's that simple. Like,
it was, you know, there were certain things. That, like, I always remember the Munster players when he was down there as defence coach talking about, you know, it was simple. It was count the passes. The opposition aren't going to get more than three passes across the pitch. And then you have to shoot up and shut down the ability for them to get to the edge. And it was just making simple statements like that. There's nothing complex that he necessarily wanted them to concentrate on in the defensive system itself. It was just very simple instructions that could be taken out onto the field. And it worked so well for them for that whole thing. And I think he can have a huge impact there. Getting back to the Sharks game, big improvement in the scrum overall from the previous week. Alatoa, you know, made a difference to that, and he's now been linked. I see it today. He's going potentially signing for Claremont for next season.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I think he made a huge impact here, and I suppose how you define Alatoa's time at Leinster depends on how you define the scope of what he was there to do, because if you see it as he's there to be the backup tight head and to get them through the league campaigns and the early stages and to make sure that Furlong is rested and available for the end games, he's done a fantastic job, because that's what he does. He brings them through and they win, you know, 90%, 95% plus of these games to get them there. But if you judge it, he's there to bring them trophies, and when Furlong comes off the pitch at, you know, 60, 65 minutes, in a semi-final or final, he's there to close out the game. And maybe it's at that level that he hasn't quite lived up to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I say, it just depends on which view you have of it. I think for this one, he made a huge difference to Leinster. He gave them the platform that they needed. An area that myself and Tom talked about last week, we thought the Sharks would be well on top, and they got no change out of it at all.
Well, I mean, the scrum only matter, or the scrum doesn't matter till it does, doesn't it?
Till it does, exactly. But no, a good win for Leinster. They got them, the likes of Sam Prendergast on, another chip kick into the corner for the winger at the end to get their fifth try.
Oh, that was a lovely for O'Brien, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was fantastic. So then Leinster have Edinburgh at home this Saturday afternoon. I see that Baird and Joe McCarthy are back in training and potentially available for the match. But the bad news is Luke McGrath is now out for 8 weeks with knee ligament injury. And Keane Healy is obviously still out.
McGrath's a lass, isn't he? He's class. He runs those lines that we were talking about Blade earlier. He runs those lines really well. So I just really like him as a player.
Yeah, so they'll still be relying on the likes of Cormac Foley, and potentially what's the young guy from the 20s? Gunn, is it?
Yeah.
I don't know whether it'd be him or I think who was it? It was Richie Murphy's young lad, wasn't it? Was scrum half reserve scrum half at the weekend?
Was he? Was it Richie Murphy's son? Is it?
I think it is. That's who it is. I could stand to be corrected on that, but
I won't say anything. So just in case it is to be corrected,
on that, Leinster Edinburgh, there are two wins from two, but it was Dragons away and Lions at home. Leinster beaten by Glasgow, but seemed to get back to the business this week against the Sharks. Who do you reckon for Saturday then?
I think Leinster.
I'm going to go Leinster by 10 points plus.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a Leinster win, yeah. I think they'll just continue building nicely in that classic Leinster way they do.
Yeah.
Even though they lost first weekend.
Yeah.
That was just an error. That wasn't meant to happen. It was just an error. So
they usually, that doesn't count in the Jeff predictions.
Nah, they usually score more points than the opposition. So I will go with Leinster, just following that math.
Even though you really hate them.
I'm deranged. I wouldn't mind this joke. It wasn't even about me. It was about you two. I was the non-biased one. But we'll move on.
Move on then to the Munster game, the game you were actually at, but you didn't know the result of.
It was a draw. It was a draw. There was three wins and a draw this weekend for the provinces, and Munster drew.
Yeah, so a 13 all game draw away to Benetton. Bit of a strange match.
Yeah, can you pick my word for this game?
Sluggish.
I'm not that far off. Resilient. Resilient. Now,
I like that.
You're right, it was a strange game. But what I will say is, and I said it, some coaches said it to me, some players said it to me, because like I'm quite a big deal and I was chatting to some of them because they all know
that's
me.
What you do. Television's Jeff Neville.
Went up, yeah. You may recognize me from that one time. I was on TV for like 8 seconds. But how did I say it at the time? It's a good 2 points. Like, you look at the game, right? And don't get me wrong, an awful lot of errors. At the same time, credit to Benetton's D for a long, long time. It was very good. It was a lot of energy, very physical. But 70 minutes into that game, I looked at the scoreboard and it said Munster 3. And I turned to my wife and I was like, fucking 3 points. Like, after 70 minutes, 3 points. And they come away with 2 points. Like, I mean... That's a good draw, like, and you.
It is. It's 2 points won rather than 2 points lost.
100%, and it's 2 points off Benetton as well, right?
Yeah.
But you look at this time last year, Munster lose that game.
Definitely.
100% Munster lose that game last year. The exact same one last year on the road, they lose that. They don't earn a draw or anything like that, right? Now, you fast forward a year, they're drawing those games. They're coming back. They're sneaking a draw. They're yoinking a win off Benetton. Like, if you're Benetton in that situation, yeah, if you're Munster, you're probably going home frustrated with a few things, blah, 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 right? If you're Benetton, you're raging. Like, you're absolutely raging that you've let that win go, right? That's a win at home by all intents and purposes. You just had to hold out for another, what was it, 14 seconds or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But Munster found a way to get a score and to draw it. And that, for me, is resilience. I think it's a great, like, not a great game, don't get me wrong, but a great result.
I'd agree with that. I think it's 2 points won for Munster rather than 2 points lost. And totally agree about last season. It would have been gone. Overall, like, the first 70 minutes of this game, Munster, and in some ways it was understandable. You had Ryan and Donnelly as the loose head props, virtually no experience there. It's great learning curve for those guys. But look, Munster got done at the scrum.
Yeah, was it the first scrum of the game, I think? Did Benetton win a scrum penalty pretty much immediately?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. Now, something that probably didn't come across well on TV was the state of the pitch. I don't know if it showed on TV very well, because at the game.
Okay.
But it looked like I've genuinely seen better pitches at clubs, like, at amateur clubs. It looked muddy in patches. But now, don't get me wrong, Benetton scrummed with the same pitch. Like, so I'm not kind of copping out there. Like, but there was a couple of slips. I think Archer slipped definitely once, if not twice. I'm trying to remember because I haven't actually watched it back. But I haven't watched it back fully, I should say. But like, again, I was kind of like, do you know what? It's just a slip. It's not like he got
It's a learning curve for the young loose heads that were there. I think there was a point in the second half where it seemed Munster would give up a penalty at every scrum. Benetton would kick the ball into touch, up the line into touch, and would then give the ball back to Munster for a scrum from a crooked throw, or they would lose the line out. And that was the only thing that was happening for about 10 minutes. That was the entire flow of the game, that it was just moving that way. It was going from scrum to line out to scrum to missed throw or whatever it was, and just play on. And it was frustrating to watch. And I think what you said about the pitch, sluggish was the word I thought of. And it seemed to be that the guys, there was almost a lack of energy at times from the guys. Yeah. And maybe the pitch had something to do with it.
Do you know what it looked like at times? Do you ever try and run in a dream? And
you're going nowhere
and you're just like, hurry up. You're still going nowhere. It kind of looked like that at times. But yeah,
I was looking at the game, and like that, with some of the speed of it, I was going like, jeez, I still have a chance to play. I don't have Tom's quickness or anything like that, but you know, jeez, I might get a game out of that now, you know.
I have the boots in the bag, Graham, throw me on. I remember meeting a fella at halftime. I went down to get a pint at halftime, and bumped into a fan, whatever. And I goes, "You enjoying the game?" "Nope." I was like, "All right, fair enough." I don't know. I genuinely think they lose that game last year. They steal a draw in the dying seconds. It costs Benetton 2 points away from home, and Benetton at home are a sticky team. Like, you think back to that Ulster game last year when they had to go to Benetton, and we said it. We were like, this will be a very sticky game. Now, I can't remember did Ulster get out of it with like a 3-point win or something? But like, the scoreline, or no, did they lose?
I think they lost, was it?
And do you remember Benetton just kept hoofing it to the other side of the pitch, and their kick chase was just relentless. And it was if I remember correctly, it was a high enough scoring game. But we said that it would be sticky. You look at any Munster game away over the last couple of seasons, and like, I'm not talking just under Roundtree, I mean in general, it's a very tough place to go. Do you know how many players they have on their list?
No.
56. That's the size of their squad. It's essentially two Welsh regions in one, or two Welsh teams in one. Outstanding. Like, it's a huge number. But I think they would have lost that game last year. They stole a draw last minute. And to be honest with you, Owen, I think it's one of those games that you don't even review. You just go, fucking take the positives, let's go. And you just never, ever watch it again, to be honest. There's two, there's three games I think you don't watch back. Finals you win, finals you lose, and games like that. I think
that's fair enough.
There's absolutely no point because we know what happened. Just move on.
Well, you may not watch it back, but I think there's a couple of things they need to take from it. One is they need to sort out their line out throw.
Yeah.
figure that out themselves. I take from it, again, the second rows. The Edwin Adogbo hype train continues on. The man is just...
He's enormous.
Oh, just power forward. How he can truck it up at such a slow speed without that this hitting the line of pace and continue to make yards is unbelievable.
He was beside me as I was collecting a sandwich in the airport. And like, it was one of those...
Did he take your lunch money?
Do you know what? Even if he did take my sandwich, I would have been like, you need it more than I do. But it was one of those things like, do you know, you think to yourself, like, we all know big people. Like, we've been surrounded, like, we've been in rugby or involved in rugby for long enough that we all say, like, oh, him, oh, yeah, geez, he's massive. Like, do you know, we all know a big Tom, like, or, oh, yeah, John's massive. Yeah, geez, John's massive. Who can get over the size of John? But when you see an Edwin Adogbo in real life, you're like, my friends are tiny. You are a huge human. Like, who's it? Tom Ahern walked into the airport lounge, whatever. Or lounge. I don't know if you've been in Treviso Airport. It is far from a lounge. Walked into the airport. That's all it is. And my wife was like, how does he like live his life? How does he fit into cars? How does he sleep at night? Like, is everything specially made? Like, I was like, to be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if it was. I heard a story that Orgy Snyman's like couch has to be specially made, etc. Because it needs to be deeper back, etc. And I'm just like, yep, I'd fully believe it because they're enormous. But yeah, Adogbo is just, to sum up the story that I've now been going on for about 3 minutes, Edwin Adogbo, very big human.
And the guy you mentioned there, Tom Ahern, he actually changed the game for Munster.
Yeah,
He brought the impetus off the bench, got the try at the end. He was one of the main reasons that Munster did it. He brought that energy, he brought the aggression to the breakdown, and even with the carrying.
I think Munster as well need to get used to teams trying to slow down their ball. So Munster had the fastest ruck speed last season in the URC. And I think that this season teams are going to be like, okay, we need to slow that down. And I think that's something that Munster need to get a bit cuter about as they're playing and just get used to teams looking at them in that light.
Yeah, and I suppose this goes back to, if you go back to this stage last season, Munster are going to have transition to an on-ball team, and part of that is you have to be clinically efficient at the breakdown on your own ball because you need to commit less numbers to it but win it at speed. And as you said, if the teams can target that and slow it down, you're just going to holding patterns with the defense that's set and rushing up on you, and you're going to look poor. And I think part of that's what happened on Sunday with Munster. Moving on then to Munster this week. They have Dragons at home on Saturday evening. Now, there are a few injuries coming out of that. Josh Witcherly has a neck injury that has to be assessed, so is likely to be out for a while. Carberry is the same with a wrist injury, which is a bit of a blow for Munster this week. And they have Conway and Scanlon are both unavailable. Craig Casey is back in training with them, though, and could potentially be part of the squad. The Dragons have two losing bonus points at home to Edinburgh and Cardiff, but are yet to win this season. How do you see the game going on Saturday evening?
I think it could be a Munster win. I'm going to back Munster anyway in it. I think they will win. I think 10 will be interesting. What do you think, Rory Scannell to 10 maybe?
I think so. I think they'll go Scannell to 10 and maybe put Tony Butler on the bench.
Yeah, something like that, I think too. I know Frisch was in media duties today and he said, oh, he's happy to step in, blah, blah, blah. But like, I mean, I wouldn't read too much into that. I think we probably will see Rory Scannell at 10. I think Munster will have enough. It's in Cork, isn't it?
Musgrave on Saturday evening.
I think Munster will have enough. I'd love to be able to offer something on Dragons. I said that I would watch Dragons play this season and really buy into it and stuff. And I'm two rounds in and have yet to even see their highlights, to be honest with you. So I'm a terrible bandwagon fan in that regard. But I don't know. I think Munster lost this fixture last year. And
yes,
I think it's going to be
in Rodney Parade. Was it?
Oh, was that? Excuse me. Yeah, it was away from home. But they lost the Dragons last year anyway. I think they'll put it right this year. I see a Munster win anyway. I still think even without the likes of, as you said, without the likes of Josh Richley or Carberry, I still think that they'll have enough to get over the line, to be honest.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Welsh teams are in, I wouldn't even say transition, they're in trouble.
Yeah,
this year in terms of squads and stuff like that.
And there's also the fact that anytime there's ever been a Dragons game, I don't actually think I've ever backed Dragons for a prediction. So that plays on it too.
I think Munster I'm going to go Munster by about 10 on that one. Moving on then, Ulster. Ulster had a 26-19 win against the Bulls on Sunday. Again, good win. I thought it was going to be close. And Ulster's defence in the end held them out. A much better showing from Ulster, I thought. They seemed to get a little bit more sort of cohesion and that link play between the backs and the forwards. I think it came off a bit more in this. So some progress from that. They'll be happy with their... They've been two very close games, probably a lot closer than they would have liked, but two wins from two. Ulster will take that.
What do you think my word is? It's actually two words this time.
Plastic pitch.
No. Internal defence. They conceded a try, lucky not to concede a second. And I think coming against Connacht, who like to kind of challenge that little pick and go and have, you know, runners off the shoulders, etc. I think that Connacht's attack this weekend against Ulster will really stress that internal defence. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens there now. It's just my little insight. Yeah. Tom O'Toole's a big loss.
Massive loss. And I think we said that in the start of the season preview. Himself and Marty Moore have to stay fit for Ulster to have the chance. I think they're going to struggle with that. And he's out for, I think it's 4 to 6 weeks potentially with that.
Yeah, Treadwell's out as well then with a hip injury.
Hip injury. And Ewers is on
RTP, isn't he?
Yeah, return to play protocols. So again, that puts a big push. David McCann, I thought, was excellent on Sunday for Ulster. You know, good carries, got in amongst the breakdowns, did well for himself in that. And, you know, They're going to have to rely on him. And the other one I thought was excellent was Nick Timoney at number 8. He offers that real speed and break. I know I'm talking to the converted here in terms of yourself, Jeff, but like, he was excellent off the back of the scrum.
Ah, Timoney's class, isn't he? He's so explosive. And I think that's maybe everyone kind of looks at his breakdown work, etc. But like, he's so explosive. He's so fast as well, ball in hand, like in his carries. Like any bit of space at all, like, hugely explosive.
I think if you can match him up and have him as the number 8 with Ewers and McCann or someone like that on the flanks, and then you add in sort of Henderson in the second row, you have enough heft there to help out and sort of be able to properly exploit that sort of explosive pace. It'd be good to see for him. Connacht Ulster, Saturday night. Do the injuries tip it in Connacht's favour?
I think so. And I think it's Connacht at home as well. I think
it's not, now Connacht are, they have Carthy back, but potentially Hanrahan is been assessed for, I think it's a knee injury. Tom O'Toole and Marty Moore missing. I know the scrum only matters when it does, but it's still big. Having someone like yours available or not could be a big swing in this for me.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think with Ulster losing those guys, and they had a big exodus as well. They only signed yours and Kitchoff, didn't they? And Kitchoff and Kitchoff ain't even in yet. Like, so, I mean, I think they could be stretched pretty thin, maybe as well, in terms of quality, think, like top quality.
I think at tight edge, you're probably looking at James French to start that game at three.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe yeah.
Yeah, it's. I think it'll be close. And I think Ulster have been sort of just doing enough to get ahead, but I think Connacht are maybe a bit more advanced in where they want to be and how they're playing the game. They seem to have progressed and be a little bit further up the line in what they want to do and how they're doing it. I think that, to me, plus the home advantage, I'm going to go Connacht by about 4 points.
Yeah, that's a fair call, yeah. And I think Connacht are just going to be a bad matchup for Ulster in the way they want to play. Like, I was talking to Collie Tucker, and he said that the 4G pitch has been the difference maker for Connacht in a few games. Like, and I think this could be one of their games. And I know Ulster are on a 4G pitch now as well, don't get me wrong, but like, Connacht are on one a bit longer now. So, probably a bit more used to it, etc., and all that jazz. But yeah, I think a Connacht win. I won't go scoreline. I think it'll be tight, but I think a Connacht win.
Okay, the other big news coming out then today was David Humphreys announced as the new performance director. He'll replace David Nusifora at the end of the season. A big signing for a big job.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at what Nusifora has done over, 10 years?
Yeah.
Massive.
Like, I think he came in and he came in without the baggage. He didn't have any relationship with any of the provinces. He wasn't an inside guy from the IRFU.
No skin in the game, like, yeah. Just, yeah. This isn't working, we're not doing it.
Yeah, and I think, look, what he did made sense. I think you look at what he's done, most of it has been for the good, you know, has been for the good and has been very positive from the national side. I know there's some talk, you know, that will say that it's been it's had a bigger impact on the likes of Leinster and his policies. I agree to that. I would agree with that to a degree, but you know, you've also got to think, you know, he's also signed off on moving Robbie Henshaw from Connacht back to Leinster. That's as big a move as has happened at provincial level for a long, long time.
Carberry to Munster, maybe? In terms of, I'm not saying outcome maybe, but certainly...
The one thing I would say is Carberry at the time was probably seen as a 15 by Leinster.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost he was the Kieran Frawley of before Kieran Frawley.
He's the OG Frawley.
Yeah. In terms of that, yeah, they're the two, probably the two big ones. In terms of Leinster itself, I think, you know, that's the only one where you could say was a guaranteed starter within the national side has moved between a province and signed off. I think, you know, you look at what he hasn't, and if you want to be ultra critical in terms of Nusifora and his role, the goals that he set himself and that were published there a while ago, you know, they have failed badly in terms of women's rugby. They have failed in terms of a lot of the goals that were set for the men's rugby as well. like they were talking about, you know, for the women's, it was top three in the Six Nations on a regular basis. It was qualifying for the World Cup.
Or failed hugely in those.
You know, then you look at the sort of the men's game, it was, you know, reach semi-finals for the last two World Cups. Again, you know, didn't reach those. It was, you know, win two European Cups in that sort of same 4 or 5 year period. Again, something that they've failed to come through on. But at the same time, you've got to give him credit. He set up both the sevens programs properly, got them qualified for the Olympics. He's also taken, I suppose, and has to get a lot of credit for putting the national team to where they are and being number one in the world for so long. You know, that unbeaten run, it's putting the coaches backing them and the systems and the players. For me, Humphreys comes in, he has the experience in terms of the player negotiations from his, he set up his own, player management, player agency thing. Doing a lot of the negotiations. He would have done it with Ulster as well. He's been involved with English cricket, I think it is, before he took over this role. So I expect him. The big thing is, what will he change, or what will he see? Is he going to continue on and sort of continue on Yusufora's pathways and doing that? Is he going to look to change things around? Is he going to look to have a more even distribution of the national players amongst the provinces? Or is he going to continue working with Farrell to try and get, you know, a more cohesive use of sort of the Leinster squad? Because if you look at the Ireland squad, particularly even for the World Cup, what you're doing is you're picking players that have played the Leinster system and how that works, and then you're adding to it from an Ireland perspective. But what you're doing is you're bringing players in then from underneath. So rather than starters at other provinces, you're bringing in fringe Leinster players that are not necessarily even getting into the 23 on a regular basis for Leinster. And from that point of view, will Humphreys look to move more of those around? Will that be accepted? Will we see players wanting to move, or will he actually start to force them? And I think there's a lot of bits and pieces to do there. And particularly, I think, around the women's game, what is he going to do around that? Is that going to be just something that's held on the side and it's purely a sevens program, or is he actually going to take real action and try and sort that out?
If you had to pick one thing that you think he's going to change off the bat or start implementing changes in, because I don't think he'll come in like and, you know, revamp the whole lot. It's clearly working. And I'm not saying that's what you said either, like, but if you had to pick one thing.
I think he's going to stop provinces stockpiling positions. So I think Ireland have got to the point at the provincial level where there are enough players, and there are enough players coming through, that you're now at a point where you're no longer, if you're good enough, you're guaranteed a contract for 5, 6, 7 years. I think you're now at a point where people are pushing you for a place, not only within the team or within the 23, you're now being pushed for a place within the squad. And I think you're where he's going to have to be very cute about doing this, is you can't let a build-up of 3, 4 players in a specific position become key, because you're going to limit the game time for them there. And I think that would be, to me, that's his biggest task to start with, and how you force that out, because we've seen players want to commit to their home province, but at the same time, for the good of the national team, you're going to have to start moving them around and get more and more game time.
That's a good answer.
What do you think he'll do first?
I don't know. To be honest, I'd like to think that he will revamp the contracts in women's rugby. I'd like to think that.
That would be a good starting point.
Like, you know, consider now they've just won the WXV3, promoted into 2 Six Nations, you know, a couple of months away. Obviously. This is obviously for next year, I know, but like they've just won it, etc. They'll be playing in WXV2 next year, hopefully be more competitive in it, etc. which I think they will be, to be honest. But, you know, hopefully by the time he swings in, the steps have been made. In fact, you know what, we could even go back and say hopefully those contracts are upgraded in the near future. And hopefully it's, you know, not his job to do, like, but hopefully just things have gone the way that it can't be ignored.
I would think that there is the potential, without a massive outlay of money, to make significant changes that would make it easier to do that.
Say that to me again.
So I think there are ways, like, I don't think you necessarily have to say, okay, we're going to contract an extra 20 players and give everyone pay rises. I think what you can do is you can restructure the deals that you can bring maybe some of the more experienced people back on part-time contracts, yes, that you're willing to do that, that you invest in the younger players who are coming through college or whatever else, where you don't necessarily have to give up a job or a pension or whatever it is, a pensionable job, you know, house. I think the other thing is maybe they have to look outside the Dublin bubble, the M50 bubble that's there for women's rugby. And they've got to try and expand that, because if they continue to try do something like that, no matter what you do, it's going to be tough to make it an inclusive game, because trying to get these girls to live and train and work in Dublin on less than minimum wage, for that is going to be a tough sell.
I suppose looking at the women's game, good win against Spain.
Yeah, brings them up into WXV2 for next year,
which is where I think they should have been, and I believe they should have been, and I know others believe they should have been, and I know results got them to WXV3. Don't get me wrong, I know it wasn't fucking names out of a hat or anything, but it didn't belong in WXV3.
No, they didn't, and I think in general the results showed that. Like, you know, they were, what was it, 109-0 against Kazakhstan and 64-3 against Colombia. Look, that's telling you that they shouldn't be there. I think WXV2 is probably their right level for the moment, and then they have to sort of consolidate and build from there to try and get back into the top tier.
I think so too. And, like, I mean, I think we're also going to get a real kind of dose of reality when they play England in a few months' time, and France in a few months' time, don't get me wrong. But what I think the WXV3 did was, I was actually only chatting to someone there, I don't know, actually maybe last week or at some point anyway, about it, and they were surprised at selection, etc. And I was kind of like, well, there's a couple of things here. Like, yeah, you could use the games against Kazakhstan and Colombia, and I know we mentioned this as well, like, you could use it to just figure out where you are. I think with a new coaching setup, first off, you're selecting what you have, you're seeing what you have. And I think the main thing here in this WXV3, looking back, I didn't say it at the time, I probably should have said it a few weeks ago when we were talking, it was to win it, first off, and to get out of it, and to get up. And they've done that. Like, now, Kazakhstan and Colombia, could they have won it with different selections and without the sevens players? Yes, absolutely. Could they have done it against Spain? Maybe, yeah, probably. But again, still, it was a tight game. Like, they only won that by 2 points. And actually, a big moment for me was it 3 points down with 20 minutes to go, kickable penalty, and they go for the corner instead. That's a big, big moment, you know. Even at, like, a draw would have got them through. So, I mean, it wasn't like do or die, like taking the three. I think I probably would have taken the three if it was me on the pitch. But big, big moment, get the win. But a big thing was getting into WXV2. So now you can go into the Six Nations with three big wins on the back. You're going into that Six Nations. Like, you look at last year's Six Nations, like, Jesus Christ, what a nightmare, right? At least you're going into this year's Six Nations thinking, now we've lifted a trophy under the new coach and staff. There's a bit more belief. From what I've heard, players are happier. You know, they've, you can say, like, look who we beat to lift a trophy. But, like, I mean, you have to start somewhere. Like, you look at the men's sevens team, right? The men's Irish 17, just for example, you look at where they started and the teams that were playing when they started. They're an Olympic team now. But you look at where you have to start somewhere, like. And after the results that Ireland were getting last year in the Six Nations, they scored three tries. Like, one of them was a penalty try. You look at missing out in the World Cup, etc. you look at that whole, I was about to say renaissance, that's not the word. When the competition kind of after, like the backdoor competition, I can't think of the word now, but you look at the performances there, like, and the losses they had in those games as well. Like, you need to start somewhere. And do I believe that they belong in the WXV2? 100%. Like, 100%. I'm not saying they deserve to be up there with England and France and New Zealand, etc. at the moment, because they're not there yet. But Italy, Wales, they certainly have the potential to beat these teams.
It would have been a lot worse to come off the back of the Six Nations with those type of results, be in WX2, lose and get relegated to WX3 for next season.
That's
at least,
would they like, this is the thing though, would they have got relegated from WXV2? I don't think they would have.
I don't know. I'm just saying, if you have losing can become a habit. If you're losing your games in the Six Nations, you come in and results don't start going your way in WX2. You start losing there, you're down at the bottom. I think what you said there in terms of WX3, yeah, they're beating teams, but it's about building momentum. They have something going in rather than sort of still on a downslope is where I was going with that.
Yeah, but I think like they go into this year's Six Nations, you look at the five opposite them. I think they have the ability to beat Scotland. Absolutely. I think they can beat Italy and I think they can beat Wales. Like, you look back at the Welsh game last year, like, look at that first half against Wales and tell me that's not incredibly fixable. You look at the second half against Scotland and tell me that's not fixable. You look at, like, their attack. Yeah, look, I mean, it's kind of hard to judge. Probably the Spain game is the only game that you can probably talk about the attack here, really. Like, but I still think their attack needs to improve massively. It was dreadful last year. It was dreadful in the run up to the World Cup qualification, etc. That still needs to improve. Defensively, still needs to improve as well. And it's kind of hard to talk about defense as well, given, you know, the opposition they've had so far this year. But I think it'll be a real stark wake-up call in the Six Nations. But at the same time, I do think that a fully stacked Irish team can come third, maybe. Like, I genuinely do think they can. And
I think that's their aim now. It has to be, like, you've got to be realistic. They're not going to be able to compete with the France and the
England. Oh no, and I think anybody who says like, oh well, they should, you know, they will be able to compete with England and France aren't watching the game, like, to be honest with you, and they're actually probably doing a disservice to the progress they're trying to make. But I think if you said right now to Ireland, I'll give you a third place finish. Right, if you said to the coaches, I'll give you a third place finish in the Six Nations, it bites your hand off.
Totally. I think what you said is right. I think it's, you've got to win your games against Italy and potentially Scotland. And then it almost becomes a cup final to try and beat Wales for that third spot.
I'd actually go differently and I'd say Scotland and Wales are, I think Italy would be the toughest of the three, to be honest with you. But I do think that they have the ability to do it. What I really hope we don't see, and we're probably putting the cart way before the horse here, because I know it's not for another few months, etc. But I hope we don't see, and I don't think we will, but I hope we don't see this whole, you look back at the selection process before, like, you knew you'd be missing players for 2 years ago, they knew they would be missing players for the England game. So they don't change up the week before. Like the way Considine, I believe, was dropped. Was it after the first game or after the second game? It was one or the other.
You were parachuting players in just for that single game.
And then they're parachuted back out. And then you're telling Considine, right, you're back in. And you're like, oh, listen. You look at, I suppose, last year in the Six Nations, the selection policies around players. Like, I mean, Dan O'Brien in the first four games. Or was it that? Was it? Oh, I know I did a graph now. I'm just trying to think back. It was so long ago. But I think there was, in the first four games, I think there was four different halfback partnerships. And, you know, you're being told, like, oh, we're building for something. and you're kind of like, what are you building for? Like, because we're lifeless in attack, shapeless in defence. But I genuinely think this year, beat Wales, beat Scotland, Italy, I think, is there. I think Italy could be the cup final, as you said. In this, England and France, you genuinely do your best, but I just hope that the selections, etc., give the team a much better chance than they had last year, I think. I mean, you look at Ailsa Hughes, for example, last year at 9, and again, this is top of my head, so forgive me if I'm wrong. I believe she only came into the 23 for the fourth game, maybe the third game, the third or fourth game, anyway. And then she wasn't starting. She went straight into start, let's say. And then suddenly she's out for the next game, or she was on the bench for the next game. So, I mean, I just really hope that the selection policies give them a better opportunity, to be honest with you. But again, I guess we'll see, you know?
Yeah, lots of time for that to come good. Well, we'll round it up there, folks. Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast. Please do rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, as it really helps, and be sure to share the podcast on social media. Hope you have a good week, and potentially, well, look, at least two of the three of us will be back next week. Just a matter of guessing which two.
Owen will be back.
It'll be turned into the Over the Hill Prop podcast next week. Have a good week. I'm back to chat soon again.